Hi, and welcome to Conversations About Language Teaching. I'm Diane Neubauer. I have a PhD in multilingual education from the University of Iowa, and I am a Mandarin Chinese language teacher, now online and in the past for 10 years at the K-12 level in the US. And I'm also a teacher, trainer, and researcher. And I'm joined today by...
Reed Riggs. Hi. So I am Reed Riggs. I have a PhD from the University of Hawaii, and I'm currently a high school teacher teaching 9 through 12 Mandarin in an IB program. My research gets into usage-based approaches, looking at how we build mental representation in our mind and how our environment around us supplies the input for that.
And today we were going to meet to talk about a topic I suggested. One thing I realized was I never went back to see what our previous episode said we were going to talk about. So this may be entirely different, but we'll see how it goes. So the topic I suggested was, how do you plan for beginning level classes, like total novice learners, no background in Mandarin Chinese? Because I think there's a few really interesting things about that. And because I realized this summer, I really have a way to think about that at this point. And so want to share some of what I've done and then bounce ideas off of you, Reed, and talk
perfect.
Through some of those points.
Okay. I want to mention why you're the probably the more appropriate person to lead on this topic. The students that I teach are not technically total beginners. They've had 5 years of elementary classes, or 5 years plus 3 years of middle school. So when I get them in high school, they usually can say, "Oh, we've been, you know, memorizing vocabulary. We've been, you know, practicing sentences. We've been doing a lot for many years." So I don't think any students I have are ever true total beginners in my school setting. In the summer camp, okay, Star Talk camps, we did have total beginner classes. And so I can speak to that experience. I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah. And then you used to teach at university level, and they all were in their second year, I want to say, or at least they weren't complete beginners there either.
I had
right?
The 101. I taught 101.
That you did.
Total
okay.
Beginners. I had total beginners.
Yeah.
So I've taught
yeah.
many university total beginners. Yes, I have.
Okay. And so I've taught a wide range of levels, including some in a 2 week Star Talk program who were, I think some of them were advanced low, really quite advanced language proficiency in a program there. But otherwise, actually most of my students have been right at the beginning novice level, or they started at that level with me and then progressed. So some of the people I now teach online started learning Chinese with me a few years ago and are now novice high and intermediate low with just once a week classes. So I definitely have experience like that. The other reason though that I think a lot about how to start with total beginners is I've had the opportunity over the past few years to be a language lab instructor. So at the Agen workshop in France, as you know, we were there together in 2019 in the same language lab. And the way that those go, you're inviting anyone to be a language student and then others to be observers. So typically in a language like Mandarin Chinese, you're not expecting much background, if any at all, from any of the students. So you start with square one, just right at the very beginning. And then the high school classes I taught, middle school and elementary levels, I was very typically working with total beginners too. Just a handful of heritage language learners, or once or twice a student who had maybe a little exposure to Chinese outside of the school setting, but yeah, really rare for me. So most of my students at least started at that total beginning level. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up was, intuitively to me, this is kind of the bottleneck point, especially for Mandarin Chinese, but for other languages too. My sense had been, just kind of from observing what seemed to happen with students and comparing notes to other teachers, it seemed like that beginning novice level success or lack of success both for the teacher and the students really seemed to be consequential. Did the student continue? How did they think about themselves as a language learner? I was excited to find that there is some research that has that concept in it. So Pete Swanson in 2010 did a study, and I'm looking at the numbers. He surveyed 463 in-service language educators from Georgia. And they were from a variety of languages, wide range of experience levels. And he was asking them about who was going to quit or retire within the next year and why. And tracing some of the correlations there, one of the big factors was feeling unsuccessful at teaching novice level students. And I think some of that push from ACTFL to use more of the target language to communicate with students in the classroom, like the 90% plus target language use position statement, I think that has re-emphasized an area that's really challenging for teachers, and that's using a lot of language with students with very low proficiency. And so really finding ways to strategically think about how do we start with that and make that successful right away. Interesting, successful, and yet simple enough, especially again in Mandarin Chinese, because there's no cognates you can appeal to. How do you handle those kinds of issues?
I want to add a couple
go for it.
Things. Yeah. So I haven't heard this term used. You said bottleneck. I think that's a really useful way to talk about this, because it's, you know, oftentimes when we talk about how to teach total beginners, there's a big clamoring that comes back from a lot of different people, to teachers typically and researchers too, who would say, well, they're not the only students. Why only focus on them? And it's from an institutional perspective, like students choosing which courses they're going to stick with. Students often come into Chinese and other languages too that they perceive as hard, with the expectation that they might switch out in the first week. I might go to Spanish. At my school right now, we have students who are starting sixth grade and saying, I'm only checking this out. I want to see how the class looks. And my plan is to switch over to Spanish. And so the Spanish enrollment is the highest at our school. And this often happens. It happened at the university level too. And the attrition is fast. Like the numbers of students in the first year, university especially, I don't want to say especially, from my experience in university, what I've seen is the numbers of students in the first year are just massively larger than students in the second year. So massive dropout.
And there's probably multiple factors. They're not in that major or minor program. They've got a lot of other courses to take and things, but still, I think that says something.
They spent a whole year during that first year. And often when the language is a requirement at the university, whatever school, usually language, they're taking it because it's required. So which language they choose matters. And if students are perceiving that a language is hard, then, you know, they often won't do it. And then the response I often hear from teachers is, well, this language is a hard language, so the students need to just learn grit. The students just need to learn, you know, they put the blame on the students. So I think that's a good topic for us to talk about, what are some really
successful
principles and micro practices to help beginners. And some of it is just an institutional goal. How do we keep enrollment high? But that is going to depend on those real other factors. How do we keep students motivated? How do we really connect with them? So it ties to the real social, emotional, and language growth as well.
Yeah, they're all wrapped up together. So I'm thinking kind of through a linguistic lens, but not totally. So I'll give you my overview. This is how I think about it right now, and then ask questions or bounce off ideas or something like that. So I've really taken up in a linguistic, what I'm thinking about linguistically to start from. I'm thinking through the super seven verbs. That's a term coined by Terry Waltz, about kind of seven concepts that are very, very widely useful. They're going to be a wide range of subject matter you can talk about using just a few key verbs. So it's things like going, wanting, liking, being located at, existence, having. I must be missing one. I've got six
it's
fingers
hard to
up,
remember
so.
The seven, but
right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But what I've found is that starting with one of those verbs as the core thing and getting a sentence and then playing with that sentence. And so here's an example. So one way I've started total beginners, because I need a lot of different ways now to start total beginners. Still very simple, very practical, very immediately something that we can talk about together and think about. Not a greeting. I was asked recently, why don't you start with greetings? Wouldn't you start greetings as a unit for level one? I'm like, no, I just used greetings. I'd just say hello to them in Chinese. I'd say ni hao, ni men hao, and we just used that. I wouldn't make that a unit. But what I would do is something like, for example, this is a panda. Like, so I'm saying it in English. Of course, I would be speaking in Mandarin Chinese with my students, but for the purpose of the podcast audience, we're thinking wider. So I would have photos and say, okay, this is a panda. Oh, this is, and we've got a variety of different photos. It's like one really simple sentence. Then you can get negative sentences. This is not a panda. You can start asking the students if they think it's a panda. So the phrase for do you know or do you not know is really helpful. Maybe is another big game changer term. So I have those on the wall, maybe, and then imagine. And like those three things have been so helpful to me to be able to use right away with this super simple sentence. So one of them could be just about something is something. And then we can start to play with that. Where are the students a panda? Are the students a teacher? Are the students a student? Oh, are you Dr. Neubauer? No. I'm Dr. Neubauer. Right. You knew that. Okay. So we can play with this really simple sentence. I think that has communicative purpose. That kind of play with language is like goofing around together through the way that we're using the language to talk to each other. I think that's legitimate communication.
I
I don't
agree.
do that constantly all the time,
No, I
but
agree.
that's an angle to begin.
It is. And I think that this sort of a theme that's kind of emerging from what you just said, what is it, what's going to be the most useful? And the things that are the most useful doesn't mean the most useful just for beginner students. I think as Robert Harrell says, I'm going to say good morning to you every day. Like we say hello to each other many times a day. We don't say, oh, that's for children, or oh, that's for beginning learners. That we just say it every day. We talk about food every day. And so when you talked about is, you just reminded me that my current unit for my diploma program year one students in our IB themes, the first IB theme in the diploma program is identity. And identity is they're supposed to be broad. They're supposed to be super broad. And I think our essential question is something like how does a place influence how a person sees themselves, something like that. So we started with a news article about dog and cat ownership in China. And then we asked the class who likes cats more and who likes dogs more. And then the next news article was about how the Chinese government just in 2020 reclassified dogs as pets and not livestock. And so
I didn't know they were livestock before that. Wow.
it went deep real fast. And so,
Yeah.
but so we started that class with a picture of lots of odd pets. We had dogs and cats, also pythons and rats and rabbits. And we just did
Chickens?
surveys. What's that? Chicken.
Chickens?
We're gonna review it with a. I'll add a chicken. I'll add a chicken. If you want to send me a photo, I can use one of
Oh, yes.
anyone that you want. You send me any photo you want of any of your chickens.
Very good.
So that concept of identity. So now the takeaway here shouldn't be, oh, identity. If advanced students are doing it, therefore beginner students shouldn't do it. Again, it's that same thing that what's the most widely useful, and the most widely useful shouldn't be by proficiency level. It's just a concept that we're exploring because it's the most useful all the time everywhere. Is this your teacher? No. And it, literally a student, this was just a field trip we did. I was we did some field work clearing out weeds outside the school. And so I met up with all these different grade level students, and I was one of the supervising teachers. And I was dressed for the sun. I had a hat on, glasses and stuff. And this one, I think, seventh or eighth grader, we were all standing in a group waiting for directions, and he looked at me and he said, "Are you a student?" And I said, no, I'm a teacher. And I said, what's your name? And he said his name. And I said, oh, I'm Dr. Riggs. He's like, okay, cool. So we had this little interaction that established he genuinely wanted to know, am I a student or a teacher? And we're not practicing language. Well, in an abstract sense, we are always practicing language all the time. You and I are practicing language right now all the time.
Right. But it's, we're doing something with it besides
something
that.
Something with so, it. Yeah, yeah. It's incidental practice. So identity is, I love that, you know, you choose that for your start because it's always going to be a useful kind of topic.
Yeah. And building off that idea of identity, one of the other starting angles with one of those other super seven verbs was location. And I just did this past summer, partly inspired by Ben Tinsley and Map Talk that I saw him present about. And so thinking about where and location, and it was an angle that I thought, if I want to head towards introducing students to the place I lived in China the longest, in Yunnan province, with an E people group there, how could I start that in really simple language and get at some of those identity issues that are deep, but doing it with very simple language? And so I used the term for is located at Zai. And so I started out with my simple statement there was, I am in Agen. I was teaching it in Agen, France at the time. So it turned out to be really an emotional statement to make because I had some trouble getting there in travel. And so to say I was in Agen was like, yay, you know, but it really worked because we were all traveling from different places to get to that place. So we could say, like, I found out again, I was doing the playful thing with them where, like, so Thomas, are you in Agen? And playing around with where are they located and being like, I can't believe every one of us is in Agen. This is amazing kind of thing. I could do that with extremely simple Mandarin. And so like a high sense of success, something that was playful, something that was personal to the students, and yet something that was going to let me lead towards some sort of meaningful content. In my case, I was headed towards introducing them to this group of people where I had lived in China for 4 years. In the case of the panda example, it was going to be learning content about pandas, how they looked, how, what they ate, where they lived, and then about panda poop. And so, because that's really interesting stuff, and you can do all that with very simple language, just building a little bit each day. Each day at that workshop is about 2.5-3 hours of language time. So I think of it as like the first month of school, if it was a middle school or a high school program. So that beginning first unit could go somewhere that was like conceptually deep, yet still fun and still personalized to the students. There were things they could share about themselves. One other one that has been a good starting place for me is the verb have, yo, and then I'll ask about who has which kind of pet. And then head from that into a little, it's a picture talk more than it is movie talk. I use still images from a very, very short video clip about a cat, a mouse, and then there's a surprise animal, which I won't spoil here. But the cat is trying to catch the mouse and something unusual to most people who see it happen. Some people know about the, yeah, I sorry to be odd about that, but so there's some sort of engaging story to that. Yeah. In the process of that story, they're learning about animal predation. I'm going to say, I mean, there's informational learning comes from it is because there's this surprising twist in the video for most people. So there's some kind of a thing we can talk about, but we start at this really, really simple kind of a statement. I'm trying to think if there's any other really good example that, yeah, usually it's is or is located at or has, and that's often the angle. But then you can see where I've got some kind of a direction to go with it.
Right.
So it's going to lead to something.
Yeah. And so I think one of the problems, this comes back to the same problem of like form versus meaning, that if the teacher is planning according to those forms and says, oh, I'll just say a bunch of random things that use that verb, I think that's missing the meaning side of it. Really, you probably want to start with some sort of content. It could be a little video with you take pictures from. It could be, if you're experienced and talented at spinning stories with students, then you just jump into that. But if this is all very new, I would start with something concrete, like a picture. But the question is, what
usually what I do.
Yeah. What aspects of the picture do you want to focus on? And so it's focusing on could be where that person is. And so you focus on, you know, where is that person? And if that's the case, then you start, you can build out your planning from there. So other pictures of where that person has been, other possibilities, if you want to play with ideas. And so you'd say, you know, is this person in, you know, some other place? But you kind of see what makes sense for the picture, not for the language. For the language, right, you're just keeping it simple.
Yep.
But for the, it's the meaning side that I think we often miss out on. And a lot of language teaching turns into, you know, the teacher is focused on form. The teacher is focused on some kind of verb or some kind of target word. And so then the teacher just jumps around in topics, like jumping around different example topics. Maybe students provide a little info, and then that info is never used. It's never built on. It was just for practice. Like, that's the problem, is that it was just for practice. And it's unfortunate that students often come into the room expecting that. And so when the teacher never again refers to that answer the student gave, you know, do you have any brothers and sisters? I have two brothers. Oh, good, good, good sentence. And then we never mention the brothers again. They just never come up again. So, so I think that I like to
It tells everybody in the room that what's important here is the subject matter and not the people. And we want to be teaching students rather than teaching a curricular mandate.
Well, and if the curricular mandate is focused on language, then that's the problem. We're saying that we're going to cover these words here and nothing else matters. Everything is in service to, it's like every answer, every bit of information about yourself, every information about the world and history is only in service to these target words right now, or this target grammar right now. And what I'd rather say is it's that information about the world, it's that information about the students. That's what we're going to try to build on. We're going to focus on that. And then the language will come up. I've started saying to my students recently, I do a pretty non-targeted kind of thing with them where we have some kind of guiding question, an essential question. And I narrowly stick on some kind of topic within that. So day after day, we're kind of reviewing similar information, pets for the 11th graders. We're doing healthy food for the 9th graders. But day after day, we keep just doing surveys and all kinds of different discussions. And I have them like draw pictures. They have a picture I cut in half and put on different parts of the room, and they have to tell each other about it. But there's a border that has keywords that they can use to tell each other about the picture. And I don't ever target anything. It's just that a lot of words naturally keep coming up because our topic is so narrow.
Yep.
And that's what makes the language naturally repeat. And if someone were to observe me and say, hey, I noticed this one word came up and never came up again, I would say, that's the nature of language usage. That's how language usage works. And because it's so rare, maybe that means it wasn't as useful. And maybe it means that by its own nature, we don't need to learn it right now.
Right.
Over the
long term. Exposed to it once was enough for that. You know, you need it for that moment. And then you don't have to test everything you're exposed to in the class.
That's right.
You can also be exposed to things in the class that you are not tested on. Like I mentioned the thing about the knows and imagines and maybe. I don't test that. We just start using it. And then I start hearing students will refer to it too, but you don't have to like make it a target.
Yeah.
I think the thing you said about less targeted, I think fits perfectly with planning for more upper levels.
Sure.
I stick very targeted with those beginners because I want that high success feeling for them.
Yep.
High comprehension too.
Agreed. Yeah, it's okay. And but at the same time, that's the form side of what you're doing, the language side of what you're doing. There's a meaning side to what you're doing when you're targeting. And it's that you're really sticking on a narrow topic. Like you're not jumping around random topics so that you can target that verb or that language bit. You're keeping track of the topic. You're building on the topic. You're connecting information to the topic. You're connecting information to that information. There's a meaning side to it that is very carefully controlled as well. And, you know, if it's a picture like, where are we? That survey of where are we and that play with, are we in this funny place? Of course not. Ha, 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 ha. All of that is cohesive. There's a cohesion to the meaning side of it that is missing, I think, when teachers say, oh, I got to cover these verbs today. I got to really target these verbs today. So I think that with that, the side that we often forget, I think as language teachers, I'll keep saying this over and over, we talk too much about language as language teachers, like even among other language teachers who say, I target this verb, I target this verb. Good. Yeah, do that. We also need to talk about the meaning side. And so how is the meaning kept cohesive so that students have any reason to listen at all? Like I was just saying just yesterday that puns, like dad humor, people often groan and want it to stop. And to me, the structure of dad humor is often meaningless puns. It's like you just said two words that have something in common with how they sound. And then there's nothing else to gain from it. It's just funny that they sound similar. It's almost like children playing with the sounds of words.
Yeah, you're right.
He had a mat, he had a pat. Ha 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 ha. Those are just sounds. Like that's all, that's the only reason that they're laughing. And so I think that it's already annoying to, we already have the evidence that it's annoying to people when there's just something with language form going on and there's nothing meaningful to, because we listen for meaning. That's how we normally communicate. We're listening for the meaning. So yeah, it's something interesting to think about.
And one last point about this kind of planning, I think that is useful, is that the examples I gave there, you're easily able to do something both about the people in the room and hearing from the people in the room about whatever they want to share. But it's also able to touch on intercultural concepts and intercultural learning right from the get-go by using pictures, images from a target language community or from an informational setting, like when I was doing things about pandas. And I think that's really important too. We can start that right at the beginning. We don't have to be able to talk about all of the things that you see in the picture. You brought this up before. We can use some language to discuss some aspects of what they're seeing, but they're still seeing that whole thing. They're still getting a little bit of exposure to that. And I think that's beneficial too.
Context to if we had to say simply why that extra stuff is important. This came up at a StarTalk conference once where we're talking about showing a commercial from China, and there was a teacher from a country in the Middle East. It's not relevant what country he was from. We were all from different countries. But I was saying, you know, show the whole advertisement. Because the advertisement was designed for audiences who are watching TV at home. It's got a beginning and an ending with purpose for those audiences. And so whatever you're going to focus on, you don't need to like talk about the beginning and talk about the ending or teach anything about the beginning or teach anything about the ending, but keep exposing students to it because students are human also, and they're also going to be noticing or looking for what is this? Like, what are we watching? What even is this? Who is this for? And cultural things happen. And so keep exposing, and you'll see students will often ask, like, what's that about at the end? And then you can have a little discussion where maybe they'll learn something explicitly about the culture, about, you know, audiences or something specific in the country. So when you have a big picture, you don't need to mention everything that's in the picture, but it's that all that background context
Still there.
is going to add up. In some way that we can't predict. And maybe some students sometimes gain nothing from some parts of the picture. That's okay too. But we have to allow that unpredictability of context. It's context is complex and we don't need to focus on it really. Yeah.
One other thing I think that's important to say, and this is a big caveat. I was
Before you continue, we have 3 minutes exactly
I
before
know, I know.
cuts off. You see it. Good. Okay, go ahead.
Right. It's good. We've got a timer on this so that we keep it. The thing I wanted to add as a caveat, and that was I was very free in how I could start my classes. If you're being assigned, here's a textbook and you have to stay at the same pace as the other level one teacher, that is a unique kind of a challenge. I would say that's not ideal though. If you have the freedom and the flexibility to set things a little differently, even if you're assigned a textbook that you're expected to teach, or you've got a curricular framework you're expected to follow in some respect, I think still finding those ways to make that simple first language purposeful, something that's going to be success point, yet personalized, yet it's going to head towards some sort of a content or learning about something in the world. Those things are still possible, even within that kind of limitation.
I can share from my experience on that. So both of my university jobs, I taught from a textbook. I was required to teach from a textbook. And, you know, the idea in the department was that it was all aligned. So the students would have mastered all the vocabulary of the first book so that they would be ready for the next level. And there was this conception, this thinking that if they don't, then they're not ready. They have to be ready for the next level. And so what I did was I just, in any given classroom, in a class setting, any lesson, I would just have some pictures ready and we would target and talk about just a few things. We wouldn't cover the whole vocab list in any one lesson, but we would naturally use the language, not in a native level of complexity, but I would allow words that were not in the vocab list to be naturally used where we needed them. So I might mention numbers of things, even though numbers were not in the first unit. I might mention the day of the week that it might be, even though the days of the week are taught in a much later unit. And what I found by doing that was that students were, when we got to later lessons with new vocab lists, that they already know half of them because we just
it's awesome.
Naturally using them. So I'm not, when I say natural use, I don't mean native level complexity. I just mean that you're
when
allowing some
up.
Other words to come in sometimes. Well, how are we going to wrap this up? We got to wrap it up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been a fun discussion.
It's been a fun discussion. Thanks, Diane.
Yep.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay.